My name is Loretta McDonough, and this is Sweepy Podcast, The Early Years. Hello and welcome back to Sweepy Podcast. Today I had the great pleasure of travelling down to Limerick City to visit the Children's Grief Centre and to talk with Sister Helen Cohen. I got there when she was just about wrapping up her day's work, and she was really welcoming, and same with the girls there, and showed me around the premises. And I have to say, from the very first moment I walked in, there's a sense of peace in the place. I don't know. It was Christmas time and I walked in and there was Christmas trees there, and it's very peaceful and very quiet, and Sister Helen has a lovely air about her. And it's very interesting what she has to say, and I think you're all going to really enjoy our conversation. And there's a lot to think about in what she is saying, and I think we can all learn from it.
I suppose it goes back to 2009, and so we had a chapter which all religious congregations have every 6 years, and a sentence caught me in our mission statement, and it was the struggles of today. And my background is I'm a social worker and had worked in a variety of social work settings, child protection, child psychiatry. Then I moved to a hospice where I worked with the dying and the bereaved. And I became so aware that the struggles of today was that there was little or no services or support for children. And so I went, after 12 months of kind of discerning it personally, I went and I spoke to my provincial sister, Peggy Collins, and she suggested that I'd get a group of professionals who would discern it with us.
Okay.
So I got about 15 professionals, ranging from, we had a GP, we had a principal social worker, we had a bereaved father, we had a family therapist, we had a child psychiatrist, we had a solicitor. We had a real variety of people. And so for over a 2 year period, we did a discerning process. And that group sent out a questionnaire to all agencies within the Midwest and got them to complete, or they completed it. And then after 2 years, Peggy contacted me and said that they were granting me a year's leave of absence from my job as a senior social worker in the hospice and give me two rooms in the Mount Convent.
Excellent.
And so that's where it started from.
Okay. And had you got children in mind? Had you got parents, families in mind? Like, how did the families know where you were, where to come to?
Initially, no, I didn't. I didn't have. And so when I started off, what I had to do in the beginning was to get two rooms, get a place ready, have an office for myself, have a waiting room for the parents, and have a room that I could work with the children, which actually at the time was my office. And what was very beneficial to the whole thing was that when I started, I remember Peggy recommending that I would select 8 people out of the 15 people that would become a support group to me. So I selected 8 people out of that initial 15 mm-hmm. professionals, and they met with me once a month, and I found that tremendous.
Okay.
So
support for yourself, like.
Well, support, yeah. And it was to support. Because we had no idea where the children, initially it started off as the Children's Grief Project. That's what he was called, because he was a project. And I or anyone else didn't know where it was going to go.
Okay.
So what initially I did then, after getting the rooms ready, I did up a leaflet on what I felt we would offer, that we were going to offer support to children between the ages of 4 and 18 who had experienced a bereavement, and to children of that age where parents had separated or divorced.
Okay.
And then, because I'm a trained play therapist as well as a social worker, and from my vast experience of working with children and families, I felt what the most needed was a listening ear and support.
Okay.
And so I started, and the leaflet went out, and you know, we all know there's little or no services for children. So when people heard there was Helen going working up there in the Mount and she was available and would work, we had decided we'd charge no fee for the service, but people were invited to make a donation. And it started off, as you can appreciate, very slow, but we're now 10 years in operation. We are a registered charity and we have seen 1,300 children to date, and at the moment there's over 100 on the waiting list.
And look at you, coming from a small office, two rooms.
Yeah. So what happened then, I was in that two room and then I got a third room in the building. And then what happened was that Mount Convent was being sold to Mary Macleod College, and it was a huge building. And then I was given a wing of Westbourne Convent here, and they provided an architect, and they, you can see, did up the place beautifully. And so we're here now for the last 5 years, but our plan is to buy our own premises because we have run out of space.
Yeah.
Because within all this time now, over the last 10 years, we now have full-time admin support. We also have a part-time fundraiser, and we have Teresa who works full-time as a support worker. And added on to this then, we have 7 wonderful volunteers that come in and support the children and us in the work.
God, isn't it amazing? And I can see, Helen, you have to bring me around the rooms, and I can see this beautiful feeling when you walk in, because it's like home already. So even though there are certain rooms that obviously the playroom and then the kind of not therapy room but kind of relaxation room and a talking room and a chatting room, and then we're sitting in at the moment in the parent room, like a waiting area, you were saying, it's all very relaxed and not a bit sterile. And you can feel, like a little girl walked out when I was coming in, it's a nice environment. So it would be very important when you get your new premises, hopefully, if you know, if that's the goal, that the same thing, you know, will carry through. But so where does all this money come from? Where is the funding for this?
Well, are you hoping? I have to give credit to my congregation, the Mercy Congregation. They, like, I don't receive a salary, haven't received a salary for 10 years. I was on a very good salary as a senior social worker in my previous job. So they have provided the funding. They're extremely generous. But in March, we have taken on a part-time fundraiser. And Katrina, it's really wonderful. It has made a huge difference.
Okay.
Now, I also think we were up and running 10 years. So for the first time this year, we received, for the first time in 10 years, we received 30,000, 15,000 from the HSE and 15 from Tulsa. Prior to that, the HSE gave us funding of 4,100 a year.
Okay.
But that was the only funding. Parents do make a donation, and some groups put on charity. So back last year, we received a Social Innovation Fund award, and that proved extremely beneficial. There was 142 entrants, and there was 10 awardees, and we were one of them.
Excellent. But congratulations.
So we received 15,000, we'd say, in cash, and 10,000 in mentoring. But I have to say, the mentoring was worth its weight in gold. And what I mean by mentoring, the Social Innovation Fund then gave us access to a business consultant by the name of Mary O'Carroll. She's based in Dublin. Maybe not O'Carroll, maybe Mary Carroll. She was superb. I remember she saying to me, she came down then and met the board members and met our volunteers and met our staff. And I remember she saying to me, you can't keep doing all this yourself, Helen.
No. Yeah.
You need help and you need to put it down. So with her help, we have a superb business plan. We never had a business plan. I didn't know what a business plan was, but it has made, so that business plan was, this is what we're going to strive for within the next 5 years. And
strategies on how to get there. And make a certain amount go here, and then the next amount of funding, and the next amount of funding. And did she give you ideas on how to fundraise, or is she?
No, but she said you need a fundraiser. And at the, we say we have a small fundraising committee, and Katrina had worked on that as a volunteer for a year, and I could see her skills and her talents. So she's now with us 20 hours a week. And so Katrina does any of our grants, she applies for them. And it has been tremendous and has made a huge difference.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, it's made a huge difference too. Now, so that's the funding and that's the organisation. Yeah. That's where the money comes from. And as you said, it's free for these families. Mm. So that in itself is huge. Mm, because I know I'm from Dublin and counselling services are very low on the ground. There's not many of them there. And so when parents do have to get counselling for their children, they have to pay for it. Mm. So to be able to offer a service and 10 years going with a free service, it's like, it's, you know, well done. Mm. Like really, you should be awarded and recognition should be given to you for all the girls, for the whole community. But how has this service impacted on the children? Like what do, you know, there is a perception there for young children, like you're saying you do from 4 to 18 years of age, that a loss, what does this loss mean? Is it when people die? Is it, what is the loss you're talking about for the children?
Well, when I was setting up, we said the centre going back again 10 years ago, I wanted to set it up as a centre of loss. But my provincial was a very wise and experienced woman. And she said, Helen, you are one person and you can't do it all. So she asked me to look at, what are the two greatest losses that I felt children were experiencing? And because I was working in a hospice, I could see bereavement was one. And number two, I had read a report that Limerick has and had at the time the highest rate of separation in Ireland. And I was fully aware, as my role as a social worker in the community, that there was no services for children. So we set it up as, so the loss I'm referring to was loss through death, where children experience the death of a loved one. And that can be a pet, it's important to say that, pets to children can be a pet, then a parent, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a kind next door neighbour, someone who's close to the child and who they love and care about. So that was, that's a major loss, as we all know. And the next major loss then for children is when parents separate. And what I have noticed and experienced over the years, for a lot of children, they can accept that mum and dad have separated. And of course, they're upset initially. But most children will cope very well if they have equal contact with both parents, can feel that they're allowed to love both parents.
Yeah.
Because what I'm hearing from children, and especially from teenagers, and what they find extremely soul-destroying is where they have to choose between mum and dad, where mum is bad-mouthing dad or dad is bad-mouthing mum. They talk to me about, Helen, I've been a pawn all my life and I can't cope anymore. And I get this over and over, especially from teenagers, because we all know children love both parents. And what I have noticed and observed and experienced, children can cope very well when they know what's happening. When parents separate, children sometimes blame themselves. And when children realise, no, it's not my fault that mum and dad separate. And the other thing that I find with parents, they are there wasting money going to court, bringing each other to court. And really, it's their children who are missing out. And in a lot of cases, what I noticed, there is extreme anger. And they're taking, the children are used in, you won't have access to dad or you won't have access to mum. And the children are used.
Between the both parents.
Between both parents.
Yeah.
And children do grieve when parents separate. But where children know that I'll be with, we say, my mum or my dad these days, then the other parent the other day, where they can have a normal relationship with both parents, children do very well.
Yeah.
But it's, I sadly have to say, we are hoping the end of January next year, we are launching actually a leaflet called Caught in the Middle. And it's, we have specifically done it for parents who are separated, because this is what we're hearing from children. And we're given some little guidelines on that for parents. And we're hoping that the leaflet will help parents to stop and think. Because what I'd say to parents, in 20 years' time, you will be the ex-wife. 20 years time, you will be the ex-husband. Mm-hmm. In 20 years time, you will never be an ex-mother. You will never be an ex-father. But if they continue this aggro, I've seen it, I will never forget, and I tell this story quite often. This lovely 17-year-old young teenage girl came into me, and her parents had separated when she was four. But she was suicidal. And if you had met her, she was a high achiever in school. But I'll never forget her first session. She had all her stuff written down. And she said to me, "Mom and Dad separated when I was four." But that wasn't the end of the world. I have cried every night since I'm seven. Because Helen, gosh, my mom and dad, they continually make snide comments about each other. And she said something that I've never forgotten. She looked at me and she said, "You see, Helen, everything my mom said about dad is shh." And she went like that towards her
she
body.
She pulled herself in.
"And everything my dad said about mom is shh." So I said to her, "What is shh?" She said, "Helen, all those feelings are stored in my body and I can cope no more. I went on a school tour last week and I wasn't going to come back." Now, she had two wonderful parents. I had met both of them. But I remember when I met with the parents and she gave me permission. She actually decided she wouldn't sit in. Normally, that's how we work, that mm-hmm. The children sit in. But this particular 17-year-old said, "Helen, it would be a waste of time." But when I sat in with her parents and read from what she had told me, they were devastated.
Do you think that parents aren't aware of their behaviour or the effect it's having on children?
Oh, without doubt, I have learned that. They think because they're small children that it's not having any impact. That the like I had one 10-year-old and his parents were separated. And he said to me, he said, "Do you know what I am?" And they're actually dying to talk about it. And I said, "What do you mean what you are?" And he said, "I'm a package." "Package," I said, "what do you mean?" And he said, "I'll tell you." He said, "I go to my dad's every second weekend." And he said, "My dad can't come to the house to pick me up. And it's at a, mum won't allow him. And it's in a car park.
Drop off, pick
and
up."
And this is what he said to me. Mm-hmm. He said, "They talk about handing me over." He said, "I'm handed over." He said, "I feel like a package."
And that's a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
A 10-year-old, sister Helen. Like, where does he even get those words? Oh, so to think, any of us to think that they don't understand what's going on, we're very naive, aren't
well,
we?
I've told this often because I suppose it had a huge impact on me. One of the first children I worked with was six and his mum and dad separated His mum and dad had separated the previous year. But it had psychologically impacted on him. He lost his voice. And he was speaking very, 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 very low. And his mum had come to me first. And then the child arrived and I could barely hear him. And the next session, his dad brought him. And I introduced the young lad to the workbook. And he was a separation in my family. And he was colouring in the workbook. And this was the second session. Oh, yes. First session, he was colouring it in. Second session, dad brought him. Dad went to the waiting room and I'm opening out the file to get his workbook. And as I opened out the workbook, this is what I heard. "Helen, it is very hard when your mum and dad split up." So I closed the file and I looked at him and I said, "Can you tell me what was hard for you?" "I keep all my secrets in my head." "Oh, you keep all your secrets in your head. Would you like to tell Helen your secrets?" "No." Now, very low. "Would you like to draw your secrets?" "No." "Would you like to paint your secrets?" "No." "Would you like to write your secrets?" "Yes." And this is what he wrote. And I could see, now he was six, I could read some of it.
Okay.
So when he had finished the page, I said, "Would you like to tell me about what, God, you've worked very hard. Tell me about all this you have written here on this A4 page." And he started off. "I'm wondering if my mum and dad are going to get back together again.
Oh.
Second, I'm wondering if my mum is still friendly with dad's family. And I can't think of the third one." So I go back then. "You're wondering if mum and dad are going to get back together. I want my mum and dad to get back together again, Helen." And I said, "I know you do. But," I said, "I wonder how will we find out if that will ever happen." And I looked at him and I said, "Let's think about it for a minute." And then I said, "Have you any idea?" And he said, "No." And I said, you know, your dad's in the waiting room and we could ask him. And the child got really frightened and all red in the face. So I said, would that be too difficult? And he nodded. And I said, well, I could ask on your behalf, you know, you'll be in the room with me. And he smiled. So I said, okay, when dad comes in, we'll ask dad, is mom and dad getting back together again? Now, the next one, you're wondering if mom is still friendly with dad's family. I said, tell me more about that. Helen, my mom was driving me to school last week and I saw my cousin Johnny. What age is Johnny? Helen, he's 8. Helen, I wanted to wave at Johnny, but I couldn't. You couldn't? Helen, I looked at mummy's face and she was so angry.
Gosh.
So then I looked up at the clock and I said, Tom, your dad will be due in now in 5 minutes because you want to talk to him about, you want me to say about how they're getting back together. And just as I said that, he looked at me and he said, Helen, I have a picture of my family in my head. You have a picture of your family in your head. Would you like to draw it? Yes. And he got an A4 sheet of paper and he put a line, a black line with a black marker down the middle. And on the right hand side, he drew a person with a bubble. This is my mummy and gnashing teeth. On the other side of the black line, he drew another person and a bubble. This is my daddy and gnashing teeth. And then he put two letters, V and S. Now, people think I make this up. I still have his drawing. So I said, tell me about your picture. Remember, he is 6, who has lost his voice. And this is what I got. Helen, this is a picture of my family. They're like a family of bears roaring across a river. Helen, that is V and that is S. Helen, that means versus. Daddy versus mummy, mummy versus daddy. And then I just thought, this is wonderful and it'd be great now if we can share that with dad.
Yeah.
So I said, now you've done a lot of work there now today. What would you like to share with your dad? And he said, put that away. I don't want daddy to see that. He actually never showed either parent that picture of the family of bears.
Are they afraid? Like, you've said this before about the other younger girl and the other boy, and that they seem to lose their voice when this happens.
Yeah.
And is that the same if a child loses somebody through death, or is it different? Are the children that are losing their somebody they love through death experiencing a different way of loss, less horrific or less traumatic?
Well, if I can finish off with here, and I'll answer that then because it's important. We'd say separation is more difficult for children.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because they're being caught in the middle and used as pawns. And I think there's very little support in communities. There's nearly like a stigma about being separated, whereas there is more support. And I see that there's more support for bereaved. And of course, that should be, but equally, there should be for couples. I've never met a couple who wanted to separate. But that little boy then, we never showed that. He never showed that to his parent. But when dad came in to the session, I asked dad, even though I knew the answer, but it's never my role to tell children stuff. That's the parent's responsibility. So I said to dad, you know, Tom has worked very hard here and he's wondering if mom and you are getting back together again. And the father looked at me like I had 20 heads. And I kind of looked at him like, please answer him.
Yes.
So the father looked at his son and he said very nicely and calmly, he said, no, mum and I are not getting back together. Your mum is with so-and-so and I'm with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. We've been two partners. Your mum loves you and your dad loves you. And with that, young lad looked at his father and he said, I just want a normal family. So I said to the little 6-year-old Tom, and his name is made up, I said, Tom, you have a normal family. You have your home with your mom and you have your home with your dad. Your dad loves you and your mom loves you. What was fascinating about this, and I suppose it's one of the reasons I have never forgotten it. So we finish up the session and 2 weeks later, his mom brings him back and he rings the doorbell and I go out. And this 6-year-old is at the door and he goes, hello, Helen.
He found his voice.
He found his voice. And I'll always remember his father saying that to me. His voice came back. And And when he lost his voice, the parents had brought him to a speech therapist, and it was the speech therapist that recommended the Children's Grief mm-hmm. Project at the time, because she linked to the separation.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating. And if I could roll on, I had a lovely experience last Christmas Day. I was at 12 o'clock Mass in our local Redemptorist Church, huge crowd. And when Mass was over, I thought, I'm going to let people out. So I just sat there because it was a massive crowd. Yeah. And next thing, this man stands in front of me and he said, excuse me. He said, you, Helen, from the Children's Grief Centre? And I said, I am. He said, you may not remember me, but I brought my son. And who was it? Only Tom's son. And he said, do you remember him? And I said, I said, I've often and often thought of him. I said, how is he? Oh, he said, Helen, he is wonderful. He said, actually, he's down there and I was trying to point you out. And he said, he's now 13. He's in secondary school. He's doing really, really well. And this man said to me, he said, but I want to thank you. Because he said, I know it was that work in the early stages that has made all the difference. And I remember I was very emotional and he went off. And I live quite near the church, and I was walking home. And I remember thinking, that's the best gift that I will receive this Christmas. Mm-hmm. And it affirmed that the work we were doing, what we do here is we don't offer therapy or counselling. We offer a listening ear. And I think, see, we undermine the power of listening. And we think we have to be doing all these therapies and counselling. And we discovered it, we'd say, because when the children finish up, they complete an evaluation sheet, as do the parents. And about 4 or 5 years, I had all these evaluation sheets with no names. And Dr. Liz Nixon from Trinity had visited the centre, and she was interested in our work. And she asked if she could do anything to help. And I said, I'm just really, you know, curious about the I'd love to learn from our, you know, what are we doing well and maybe what we could improve.
Yes.
So she did an analysis of the evaluation sheets, and she wrote a wonderful paper, which we'll be launching next year at our conference.
I was actually going to ask on what's ahead for you?
Like, June the 14th. But what came out of the evaluation sheets or her analysis, the biggest thing came out was that it was a place where people listened. It was, they felt listened to. Now, I want to state here, it's very important. We're not saying the parents don't listen, because that's not true. Mm-hmm. But where parents are going through a crisis, whether due to a bereavement or a separation, children will protect parents and parents' children.
Of course they do, because they love them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're going to protect your mom and dad as much as you
but
can.
But yes.
And that stops you from speaking out.
Yeah, and when parents are going, and parents tell me this themselves, when people are going through either a separation, they're emotionally, whether it's a bereavement or separation, they're emotionally trying to cope themselves, the mind trying to cope with everything else that's going on.
So it's hard.
Yeah.
And you're coping as much as you can and do the best that you can.
Oh, exactly. And with the parents, and we can see that with the parents. Mm-hmm. So the feedback we have got from parents, they love this place. They see that not alone are we supporting their children, we're supporting them.
Yes.
We support the whole family. And we're not here to make judgments, but we're here to support. And parents will say, for example, I love this waiting room. This is the only hour I have to myself.
I can imagine, peace and quiet, because it is quite lovely.
I can make myself a nice cup of tea or coffee, have a biscuit. We have a library, we have leaflets. There's Lyric 95 FM playing in the background.
Yes.
And it gives them that space. So, and parents will say, and when parents, like I remember a 9-year-old girl and her parents had separated again when she was quite young. But I remember when she was 9 then, she wanted to talk about it. But I remember she saying to me, through her drawing, what she found difficult was that when she came home after being with her dad, that her mum kept asking her questions.
About what had gone on.
Who was there? Yes. Was she there? What did you eat? Where did you go? Mm-hmm. This 9-year-old child said to me, I don't like talking about my dad. So how we work then is about empowering the child to share appropriately with their parents. So her mum came into the session and she showed her her paintings and everything else. And she then said to her mum, and she said it herself, Mum, I get upset when you ask me questions about Dad. And what really was wonderful, her mum said, you're right, I do it, and I know I do it. And I promise you from today I'll stop. And the difference that made in the child's life was that even one action, this girl was more settled in school, her concentration was better, she caught up with her schoolwork, and all because she was feeling under such pressure that I have to talk about my dad, I don't want to talk about my dad.
And isn't it great that you have a facility here that gives that time, that space for the children and the parents, so that even if the parents are coming into you and they have a 10-minute session with you and the child, they get 40 minutes then in a room to think about and contemplate what you had said.
Yes, the parents then are invited in at the end by the child, and the parents love that session, and they will say, Helen, and they will say to my wonderful colleagues who volunteer here with us, they will say things like, this has really helped my son or daughter now. They're opening up more.
Yeah.
They're more in touch with their feelings. They're telling me much more.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
It is.
And you know, and you can see after 10 years, it works.
Oh, yeah.
And if there was more places like this, Helen, wouldn't
it
be great?
Well, there's a wonderful article I'd love that people would read it. Every Child Has a Right to Be Heard by Daniel McConnell, and you'd get it on the internet. And that's what he's saying in his article. He had heard an interview I did. He's an adult who lost his mum when he was about 12. So he knows what he's talking about. And, you know, he says it's a no-brainer. We need a children's grief centre in every county.
We do.
Yeah.
Because
what we see with the work, Loretto, is what we are doing, and we know it, it's early intervention. Like the children then are not carrying the guilt that, oh, did I do something that my mum or dad died? Or was it my fault that mum and dad split up? And we might think, well, why would children think like that? But I think we as adults sometimes forget they're children, and that's how children do think.
Yeah, constantly thinking. Yeah.
So like with early intervention then, like we find they're not carrying it.
Yeah. Like you said to that young girl, once she sorted that little bit out for her mum and her mum stopped asking her what's going on with her dad.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're 4 and 5 and you get that little help right there when you're 5 or just 6 and you go, oh, that's grand.
Yeah.
It's gone. I've said what I've had to say. Mom knows how I feel, and they can move on.
Mm.
And they're not carrying, like you said, that 17-year-old boy that felt he was a pawn. If he had had a chance when he was 6 or 7 and he could have said that, you know, he would be carrying it around with him till he was 17.
Exactly, exactly.
And Helen, where'd you go from here?
Well, I suppose, as you know, we were very excited about a month ago. We won the National Lottery Good Causes Award. And like that was like we were shocked, but delighted, because it's shining a spotlight on the needs of grieving children. So what we're aiming is that we want either to build a new children's grief centre or kind of convert a suitable building. And we know what we want. Mm-hmm. We're going to model it on the Dowie, Dougy Centre. And if you go on YouTube, you will see it. It's the most beautiful building. Like it has a volcano room in it. It has a splatter where you can splatter paint on the wall. It has a room for smallies. It has a room for teenagers. It has a games room. It has a dress-up room. And to look at it, it's so our ambassador, Olive Foley, in the new year now, we're making big strides to fundraise for that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It sounds fabulous. And you were saying that you are in June, you've got a big conference coming up.
Yeah.
You're hoping to set that up and it's coming.
So we had a meeting last night about it. We're 10 years and we want to celebrate kind of what, you know, we want to celebrate how this Children's Grief Centre has worked, and to celebrate the achievements and how it has supported children and families for the last 10 years. So we've been very fortunate. We are going to run a half-day conference in LIT, that's Limerick Institute of Technology, which most people will know is near Thomond Park, because we win all the rugby matches. And
a little dig there now.
A little dig there for Limerick. Come on, Munster. And so and we can't forget our Limerick All-Ireland hurling team. And what we're hoping then, we'll have a half-day conference. Dr. Liz Nixon from Trinity is going to launch the paper that she wrote for us 2 years ago. We're really excited about that because I feel a lot of students and professionals will gain a lot from it because she's a nice balance of theory. She's theory, and then she includes a lot of what the young people have said mm-hmm. in their evaluation sheets. And then, so we're very excited and delighted that Liz has agreed to come down. And then we're going to have Daniel McConnell, who I've made reference to. Daniel is a political journalist, but with his heart and understanding what grieving children yes. go through. We will then have workshops, and we're going to have I and Teresa, who works here with me, we're going to present a workshop on supporting how to support children through separation and bereavement. Elka has another workshop. Elka at the moment is doing a PhD on the impact of parental separation on siblings. I haven't got her full title yet, but I will, but I mm-hmm. presume it'll be something around that. And then Rebecca Lyd. Rebecca works with me one day a week, and Rebecca goes out supporting teachers in the schools. And we've been running that as a pilot project since about within the last 6 months. And she's gone to a number of schools, and she has a program that she has designed.
Excellent. And
and she's going to present that. So that's the four workshops. And then we're going to, when the workshops are over, we're going to come back and have a panel discussion. And we're very happy today. I contacted Dr. Niamh Horrigan. Niamh works out of UCC, but we are delighted from June she's going to be the Vice President of Mary Macleod College here in Limerick.
Excellent, just around the corner.
Yeah, but she's the head of the Sociology Department presently in Cork. And Niamh is going to facilitate that for us, and she will do kind of a closing session with the conference.
That's brilliant. It's great. Looking forward to that. I'll be definitely down there.
Yeah.
Helen, it's been a pleasure, and thank you so much, because I know you're so busy, to be able to fit me in and the lovely chocolate cake.
Not at all. You're welcome to Limerick.
Thank you very much. Okay. Now, I told you, didn't I? A lot to think about. Sister Helen has, I think she's very wise, very compassionate, and I think she knows children, and I think she knows how grief affects them. And it was very interesting to find out. I don't know if you thought it was interesting, or maybe only hearing it for the first time, or maybe you always knew it, but how children are affected by different types of loss, and that we assume loss is death, and that it's very clearly not just death. It's the loss of an animal, their pet, a family member. It's also a loss of the relationship that they had with their mom and dad. And when mom and dad split up, it's a loss of what their family life was like. You know, they don't have that same family life anymore. And it was very interesting the way Sister Helen talked about different scenarios and how children are affected and how they get over it, and the positive effects of when a supporting parent understands and listens and is ready to say, oh, hold on, we were getting this wrong. You know, maybe I should have talked to the child a little bit more, or maybe they do understand more than what we give them credit for. So it's very interesting to see and to hear Sister Helen's different perspectives on how children cope with loss, and how as an adult and as a parent, we can support them to overcome different situations that may occur in their life, you know, and help them adapt to new situations. So I think it's important as practitioners and childminders and people that are working with children that we take that into account. And any parents that are listening, whether you're working in childcare or not, or just listening in just to hear the topics, I think, you know, if we keep that in mind as a parent myself, I think we need to all realise that we need to give children more credit, that they are capable, individual, independent, clever, young people, and we need to not take that for granted. Okay, so thanks again, Sister Helen. You were really kind to give me that time. I know you're very busy, and I wish you the best of luck in the new conference. I will try and get down to that, and in a few episodes we may report on it and let you know how she got on. Be very interesting to see what feedback she got from it. And her new idea of the centre sounds absolutely amazing, and wouldn't it be a beautiful world if every county of Ireland had a grief centre such as Sister Helen's. So thank you again, Sister Helen, for letting me into your life just for a couple of hours. You have been listening to Sweet Pea Podcast, The Early Years with Loretta McDonough. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and do share the podcast with friends, colleagues, or students who may be interested. And please rate and review us on iTunes. If you've got something you'd love us to cover, drop us an email at sppodcasttheearlyears@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter, or check our webpage at sweetpeapodcast.ie. Thank you for listening, and until the next time, be kind to yourself and take care.